Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello there, listeners. Hope you're well. You are tuned into yet again another episode in the collaboration of the Beautiful Game podcast and Eurosport. As ever, I'm your host, Budge, and I'm joined by my two faithful co-conspirators, Dot and Pete from Eurosport. Gents, how are we doing?
Very good.
I'm well.
Great stuff. Now, of course, we are recording this off the back of the latest round of fixtures. We all certainly enjoyed the France versus Germany game, which most certainly lived up to expectations. And we're, of course, going to cover that off in this particular episode, as well as a few other talking points that we absolutely need to cover. And I think the best place for us to start is with records being broken on the international stage. And when it comes to the international stage, there is one particular player that you can look to, you know, to continue breaking records. And I think, you know, with the goals that he scored in his game, in Portugal's game most recently, he has broken another one and is on the cusp of another record, and that is, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo, who scored his 10th and 11th goals at the Euros in Portugal's game against Hungary, and with the 11th goal, now is the player who scored the most goals in the tournament's history, and he also now has appeared in more major international men's tournaments than any other player in European history. We can go into the game a little bit, because I actually thought that the scoreline flattered Portugal a little bit, because it was nip and tuck and quite close right up until the 80th minute. And then, 10 minutes of madness and Portugal managed to score those three goals. But let's start off with Ronaldo, and we're going to go to you, Pete. I mean, what else can we say about the man? You know, what else is there left for him to accomplish on the international stage?
Yeah, I think everything that's been said about him has been said. And I think nowadays, I think the goal scoring, it almost isn't really a surprise. It's the fact that he is still doing it. It's the longevity that he's showing at 37 years of age. It's just utterly remarkable. And the only thing I can really compare it to is Tom Brady in the NFL. Like, to be able to be playing at the top level. I mean, the guy was just the top scorer in Serie A. Like, I know Juventus had a really bad season, but he was the top scorer in Italy, and now he's coming in. He looked like a really good bet to be top scorer in the Euros. He's broken all the records, as you said. And I think he's realizing as well now that a lot of these Portuguese players who we were talking about for the last 3 or 4 years, this sort of golden generation, they're really starting to come through. And I think any sort of idea about 2016 being the last hurrah for Portugal and Ronaldo is absolutely nonsense, because I think this team is good enough to compete now and next year in Qatar. I don't think they're necessarily outright favourites in either tournament, but they are good enough to make a run, and that's all you really need in a tournament like this. And a lot of these players are only going to get better, and that's the scary thing. And if Ronaldo keeps himself in the shape that he's in, what change is there going to be between this year and next year in terms of his performance? I mean, he's not going to get much slower. He's already lost a bit of pace, obviously, but he's completely reinvented himself to be one of the best penalty box poachers in the world. So really you're looking at it in terms of the next year and maybe even beyond that. Like, he's not, his game isn't going to go anywhere else, really. He's still got all the tools you need to be an elite goal scorer. It's remarkable.
Yeah, 100%. And you know what? It reminds me, Dot, I'm sure you remember when we interviewed Rio Ferdinand on our podcast on The Beautiful Game. When we asked him about Ronaldo, one of the things that he mentioned is that, you know, whenever they're speaking on the phone or they're in conversation, the things that he still obsesses about and the things that, you know, he finds frustrating and the level that he's been able to perform at so consistently over the years and what he's managed to win, all the accolades, you know, he still remains as hungry as ever, as though he hadn't won all of those things and all those trophies and all those individual accolades. And he's still so desperate to continue to do it game in, game out, week in, week out. And, you know, I also saw a meme doing the rounds on social media, which was showing how frustrated he was at the press conference. The fact that they was giving him Coke instead of water, like just stuff like that. You know, he understands what it takes to be at the elite level and to stay there. And he is obsessive about even the smallest things, you know, and you can see that when he's on the pitch. The fact that the guy is in such great shape at 36 years of age to still, you know, have the physique that he has, to still be able to push your body to the limits that he's able to, is just testament to his hard work and dedication and commitment.
Yeah, definitely. There's not much more to add. Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, one of the greatest players I've ever witnessed on a football pitch. And I think he will want to be the best until he retires. It's just as simple as that. He's going to try to perform to the best level possible. He's going to keep scoring goals. And I know Pete said he's lost, you know, a bit of pace, but when I look at him, he still looks fast.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
He still looks fast. And the second goal where he just showed that turn of pace to get in behind the defence and round the goalkeeper and score goals. So, I mean, what he's done for football, little kids, they just all look up to him. I mean, the way he's changed the game, him and Messi, in terms of goals and assists, making sure each season, 40 goals, it's so hard to do. And for him to do that for so long just shows you what greatness really is. And that's why I say sometimes we have to be careful when we say this player is the closest player to X or this player is going to be as good as X, because Cristiano Ronaldo has done it for 15, 16 years. These players that were hyping up, yeah, they may come on the scene, burst on the scene, have one good season, but the difference between good and great is consistency. And the one thing about Cristiano Ronaldo is that he's been consistent for over 10 years now. And that's what puts him up there as one of the greatest players ever to play the game.
It's the Robert Lewandowski thing, isn't it? Like, Lewandowski over the last two or three seasons has gone to like an elite level. Like, he is one of the best players in the world. But it's only happened over the last two or three years. Up until that point, he was still a tier one player, obviously, but he was not tier 1A like Messi and Ronaldo were. And like, I think you're right. Like, those two have changed the way we perceive football, and they've raise the bar to a level that I don't think anyone else is going to reach for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, staying on the topic of breaking records, we're gonna move on now and speak about some of the wonder goals that have been scored already this early on in the tournament. And if they are a sign of things to come, then we're in for some real entertainment in this tournament. And let's start off with the goal that should have gone to Robert Mack of Slovakia, but unfortunately goes down as a Wojciech Szczesny own goal. And in scoring that goal, Szczesny becomes the first goalkeeper to score an own goal in European Championship history. And I mean, it is a bit disappointing because of the fact that the solo effort from Robert Mack and the Maisy run, you know, it deserved a goal, right, for him. And I'm just worried that in years to come, you know, now it's still fresh in the memory, but in years to come, will his solo effort be forgotten because of the fact that it goes down as a Wojciech Szczesny own goal? I'm not particularly sure, but what are your thoughts, Dot?
I'm going to be a bit of a party pooper here, but I think it was really bad goalkeeping from Szczesny. Amazing solo run, you know, beat two or three players, but think Chesney should be covering his near post, if I'm being totally honest. I don't think the shot was the most ferocious. I don't think it was right in the corner. I think the goalkeeper could have and should have done better. And obviously, for it to still go back in was probably unfortunate. But the terrific run, but at the end of the day, it's an own goal. I can't tell you it's a terrific goal by Mac, because it's been registered as an own goal. It was a great run. It was a great bit of play. It's great bravery to even decide to do a decisive action like that. And I give him credit for that. But in terms of the actual goal, unfortunately, it's a Chesney own goal, but a terrific piece of play from Mac.
Yeah, I don't think it. I sort of agree with Dot here. I don't know if we're being the negative party here, but I sort of think that, like, the great goals are the ones where everything is great about it.
I think
the Matt goal, like, he did everything. And I know I'm being harsh here, super duper harsh, but he could have just stuck it in the far corner. Like, he didn't have to go near post. So, like, as Dos said, it was an unbelievable run. Like, his great skill and, like, huge credit.
Hazard-esque, you know. Yeah, we've seen Hazard do that in the Premier League. Yeah,
but I just think, like, it's not going to be looked at in a month's time as the best 10 goals of the tournament. Like, you're not going to see it in that Euro 2020 compilation highlight.
Fair play. Another goal that was scored that broke a record was that of Patrick Schick for Czech Republic, you know, against Scotland. The Schick stunner, as it's being dubbed. 49.7 yards. So the furthest distance a goal has been scored at the Euro since the records began. And for me, it was just, it's the reaction time and the speed of thought. So he saw David Marshall off his line, as well as the fact that he was being closed down by Grant Hanley, I think it was. And when you're looking at the goal from all of the different angles, it's just everything combined. I mean, that certainly has to be in, you know, as you said, Pete, at the end of the tournament, the top 10 goals scored at the Euros, that's got to be right now. That's got to be number one, surely.
I think it'll be number one at the end as well. I just think, it's such an absurd goal. And I think, again, obviously goalkeeper's union on this side of the call. So I don't think there's any blame you can put on David Marshall. I think he's doing the right thing. He's sweeping up. He's looking for that ball over the top. And actually, I think watching football over the last sort of 4 to 5 years or so, I think I've seen more of those attempts than I did before that, because goalkeepers are playing at a higher line now. But we don't see these goals all the time, which shows you how hard it is to do what Patrick Schick did. I mean, the picture that shows it best is when it's the picture from behind Schick, and it's him and Hanley, and then the ball is off over there. And the angle towards the goal is ridiculous. The ball's like 5 metres to the left of the goal. And that shows how much curl he had to put on it, as well as getting the dip on it. And I think players will keep trying that, because it's a really good opportunity to catch goalkeepers out. And goalkeepers will keep sweeping. They'll keep playing high lines. Nothing will change there. But he's such an absurdly difficult thing to do. And it is a once in a sort of generational type thing. And I don't, like, you talk about these goals still today, like Beckham or, like, I don't know, some of the other ones that we've seen. Like, you talk about them because you never see them. And they're so hard to do. And normally, those sort of goals come when a keeper's come off his line to either clear a ball out or to go up for a corner or free kick right at the death. To do it when, like, in the middle of a match when the goalkeeper is still within his penalty box, like, it wasn't as if he was like miles out. It's just such an impressive thing to do, and I can't see, it's going to take something ridiculously special to beat that out for top spot, I think.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think, you know, Patrick Schick is one of those players, and we'll probably go into this when we're talking about France and the Germany game, that seems to turn up on the international stage and is a completely different player when he's playing for his country versus domestically, because he hasn't really had a very prolific goal-scoring record in Germany. I know he was on loan at RB Leipzig last season. I think he got 10 goals in 22 games. And in this season, for Bayer Leverkusen, he's got 9 in 29. So he's not particularly prolific for club. But, I mean, on the international stage, he's got 13 in 27 and 4 in 5 for the Czech Republic. And I mean, he's still only young, 25. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago when he was sort of touted as this wonder kid, you know, like there was a lot of, media chat around him. And I think he still is young enough to establish himself and maybe, you know, after this tournament can really kick on and you know, have a breakout season in the Bundesliga.
I'm going to be the worst sort of person here and I'm going to promote my own work. But before the tournament, I spoke to Tomáš Rosický about the Czech team. And when I asked him which players he wanted to see a lot from him, who he thought would be most important. I obviously assumed he'd say Tomáš Souček, but he actually said Patrick Schick, and he said that everyone in the Czech Republic knows how good Schick is and they know the talent he's got, but they're all still waiting for him to put it together. Mm. And maybe this is the start of something for him, because he's only 25. Like I said, he's still got a lot of time to develop. Like, some strikers don't get going until their late 20s. So hopefully this is the start of something else.
Yeah, 100%, most certainly. And then just to round off this segment on wonder goals, we have to speak about the Andriy Yarmolenko screamer. We see him do it time and time again for Dortmund, for West Ham, you know, cutting in from the right and absolutely driving a master blaster into the top corner. What were your thoughts on that goal? Like, in terms of how it happened and the time in the game, because of course it halved the deficit for Ukraine and you know, helped to build some momentum. But it felt like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think we might touch on this briefly when we talk about Germany later. But like, in a tournament football, more so than in club football, you want big players who will step up in big moments. And Yarmolenko is a classic, what I like to call a moments player. Like, he can disappear from a game for 60 to 70 minutes and then he will appear and just smash one into the top corner. And the reason why players like him get big moves and get more and more chances than other players is because they can do things that other players can't do. And that's the category where Yarmolenko falls into. And it was such a pivotal moment for the Ukraine, for him to get that goal, to get them back in the game when they really didn't create much at all against the Netherlands. The Netherlands were in complete cruise control. And obviously, as we saw, like, they started to panic as well once the first goal went in. And I think it's the sort of goal that you could almost just copy and paste it and put it anywhere in Yarmolenko's career, be that playing in the Ukraine, in Dortmund, or for West Ham. Like, he's just got that ability to cut inside. And I think Deb said it on Monday's pod, like, you know exactly what's coming. It's like Iron Robin, but you can't stop it. Like, it's so difficult to stop. And that's where the great players distinguish themselves. I'm not entirely convinced Yarmolenko is a great player yet, but he has that ability. And he's another one who, if he can put it together on a consistent basis, he could be a lot better than he is now.
He's a very similar player to Zerdan Shaqiri. I think they're moments players. They have all the ability in the world, but they don't have the consistency. And I think the issue that a player that like Yarmolenko and Shaqiri has is that they wait for the game to come to them instead of them going and attacking and being aggressive in the game. So I think he's got all the ability in the world. I mean, to score a goal like that just shows how good of a player you are technically. But I think with him, it's more mentally and physically. Is he doing the best things in the game all the time? And for me, it's probably no, because he's got all the ability to be a top-class player, but he just doesn't put it together enough to show us why he should be worth X amount of money. We've seen moments. Again, we will see moments again in the future because he has the ability. But consistency is the big question mark for Yarmolenko. But for me, that's just a terrific goal. But that's what we expect from him, because we know he's that good.
Yeah. 100%, of course. And so finally, of course, we absolutely need to speak about the France-Germany game. For me particularly, it was, you know, it was certainly the best goal of the best game of the tournament so far. I really, really enjoyed it. It really lived up to my expectations in terms of the pace that the game was played at and the quality that we saw in that game. And I know I mentioned before when we were speaking about Patrick Schick, you know, he's a player that, you know, has played, you know, I suppose a bit differently on the international stage versus for his club and domestically. And that was also a debate that was doing the rounds yesterday on Twitter in particular, for players like Paul Pogba and Kylian Mbappe. And everyone seems to feel that for France, they are a completely different animal and beast versus, you know, the roles that they play for their clubs domestically. And I wondered if you guys had any thoughts on that before we go and speak about the game and drill down to what happened and transpired in the game. If you had any thoughts or feelings about how both of those players play for their clubs versus countries.
I think it's a bit harsh to, you know, put Kylian Mbappe in that sort of territory, if I'm being totally honest. He delivers for France and he delivers for his club team. And I think the way the France team, you know, set up yesterday, I think it was very similar to PSG, if I'm being totally honest. I think they allowed Germany to control the game and then they got the goal. And then they were thinking, you know what, let's sit back. And once this game gets stretched, let's put it to bed. And we saw that with a few goals that was ruled as offside, where they were countering and Germany had no answers for them. As for Paul Pogba, I probably agree with you. I think the French team is set up to get the best out of Paul Pogba, whereas I think Man United are just getting Paul Pogba into their 11. I think that's the big difference there. And I think he's more comfortable when he's playing for the French national team. He looks around. He sees world-class players. Kylian Mbappe, N'Golo Kante next to him, sweeping up, you know, everything in midfield. So, of course, you're going to be a better player when you're playing with better players. So, I'm not going to sit here and say Paul Pogba is a bad player for Man United. I think he's Man United's probably their best player still, with Bruno Fernandes. And I think when you put him in the French team, he's one of the best players in a great team. So, of course, he's going to look better when he plays for his international team instead of his club team because he's playing with better players. And I think the last thing I'll say on France in terms of the game, I wasn't too impressed with them yesterday, if I'm being totally honest. I think Germany were the better team. And I think with Germany, they lacked that clinical edge. And I think it goes back to when I was talking about the Champions League and it was PSG versus Bayern Munich. Very similar sort of setup in terms of formation, how the teams played the game and the approach. And I think Germany were just missing an elite forward to win that game because I think they were a much better team when it came to dominating possession, controlling the tempo of the game. And basically, France were just playing in moments.
That's what I talked about earlier with moments. Like in tournament football, you want the players to get those big moments right. Yeah. And Germany's big players did not step up. And I actually thought in the big moments, Jogi Löw did not step up as well. Yeah. I thought his team selection was poor. I know he's played Serge Gnabry as a false nine before, but I just didn't think that's what's going to trouble this French team. Kimpembe and Varane are both not short of pace. So you need to... I would have been tempted to throw Kevin Volland on as a wild card and play him first up. Or even play Thomas Müller as the main striker. Mm. I know he's been playing deeper for Bayern Munich, but I'd have been tempted to play him. If you're going to play a false nine, play someone with the movement rather than the pace. Because Gnabry's runs were okay, but they weren't great. And he was coming deep a lot. Whereas actually with Thomas Müller, I think you can tell him, all right, I know you want to come deep and be on the ball. Don't do that. Just move about between the two centre-halves and make it difficult for them. Don't let them know where you are. Whereas I think it was always easy for Varane and Kimpembe because they could see where Gnabry was. So for me, I think he got that wrong. And I think he should have made a change earlier. I think he waited way too long to make a change. Leroy Sané, I'm not sure that was the right change. Like, he's been so poor for Bayern this year. I don't understand why you think all of a sudden it's going to be different. With someone like Yarmolenko, as we discussed earlier, he comes alive when he plays for the Ukraine. There is a history of him turning up in the big moments for Ukraine. There is not that for Leroy Sané.
Yeah, so but don't you think he is a moments player again?
He is.
You mentioned him moments again.
You're right. He can give you
that moment.
But he hasn't shown that this season and in the last couple of years for Germany. And I just think that injury has bothered him a lot more than he's letting on. And I think he just needs to... I think he'll come good. I'm not saying he's done as a player. But I just think it's taking him a while to get back up to speed from that injury. And I think for Germany, I think if you're going to get anything out of that Portugal game, because let's be honest, that's the must win now. You have to win. You assume they'll take care of business against Hungary. But Hungary were a good defensive team for the most part in that game. Against Portugal, you've got to figure out a way to get in behind their defenders because it will be a different challenge because the Portuguese defence isn't as quick. Like, Diaz isn't slow by any means, but he's not as quick as Varane or Kimpembe. So I think that will be interesting to watch how he does that. But again, I just going back to my original point, I just think in terms of the big moments, they were caught short. And I think the goal was a perfect example of that. I think they switched off with Lucas Hernandez and the ball from Pogba was unbelievable. But they switched off. And then I think, if I'm being brutally honest, if that's Virgil van Dijk, that ball's going out for a throw-in or for a corner. It's not going in the top corner. And I think that's where you fall short a little bit if you're German.
I think that's the issue I had with Germany. I think I said it on the previous show. I don't think Hummels has the physicality to compete at a very top level. And we saw it in the second half when Kylian Mbappe was just saying, you know, I'm going to play on you. I'm going to take you on for pace. And we saw Hummels make a last-ditch tackle when he was like 30 metres ahead of Kylian Mbappe. And Kylian Mbappe still got the ball ahead of him. But it was, in the end, it was great defending. But I don't think that German defence is good enough to hold up against the top teams. And I know Dej is a big fan of Rudiger, but you saw him yesterday. He's a player that can lose his temper. I mean, sometimes the occasion can be
he looks a bit hungry as well. You know,
he looks a bit hungry.
but that's why he plays so well for Chelsea, because he's next to two of the most experienced players in Europe in Cesar Azpilicueta and Thiago Silva. And Silva's a great example of how it doesn't matter if your legs go, if your brain's still there, you can still be a great defender at the top level. And Hummels just doesn't seem as sharp mentally. Like, he's just not, he doesn't seem as aware as what's going on the pitch. Whereas you look at Thiago Silva, he knows what's happening before it happens. And he's three steps ahead of the opposition, whereas Hummels is playing catch up all the time.
Yeah, but I've never seen Hummels as one of the best defenders in the world. I think he's an amazing ball playing centre back in terms of distributing the ball, stepping out from defence. But even at his prime, I don't necessarily think he was one of the best actual defenders in the world. Whereas Thiago Silva, he's a defend first kind of guy. Yes, he's fantastic on the ball, but he makes sure he defends first. And I don't think that's Hummels, if I'm being totally honest.
That might be where they're falling short. And they need maybe someone, like, I don't know, maybe like a Nicolas Sule or something. Just someone who's going to come in and be more about winning the ball. And then, like, if you need to get rid of it, just get rid of it. Like, it's not an issue. And like, that was one of the things that surprised me about the Germans, where they didn't go long more often. There was a lot of clearances, but there wasn't a lot of long balls. And if you're playing Gnabry, you might as well test it and see if you can get him into the channels. But yeah, I think they need to make a decision about how they're going to play and who they're going to play, because it just looks like a mismatch at the moment.
I think just last note on Germany, I think tactically, I think the system was wrong. I don't see how you can fit Havertz and Thomas Müller into the same team, because I think they take up very similar positions. So I think you have to go with one of them and probably bring in a Sané or a Timo Werner from the start.
Yeah. I think the only other thing I wanted to add to this is that Pogba and Kante partnership has certainly been very fruitful for France. Don't quote me on the numbers, but I think in they've not lost a game that they've played together. I think there's 22 wins and 6 draws in that, but they've never lost when they both play together. So I think there's quite a few Chelsea fans who are, you know, interested after seeing that stat to potentially push for a swap and having Pogba join them at Stamford Bridge. I mean, we've seen crazier things happen. Who's to say it can't? We'll have to wait and see.
What I like just quickly on that, what I like about the French midfield, and why I think this is, we talked about France for ages, we know they're going to be the favourites to win this, but the French midfield can play in different ways. I really like that. If they need to play it short and keep the ball and waste a bit of time, they can do that. If they need to drive and bring the ball forward, they can do that. And if they need to hit it over the top to get their runners in behind, they can do that. And I think there aren't any other midfielders that can do everything they do. It's what we talked about on the pod on Monday. We were worried about the Italy midfield. Can they stand up? I can't see the Italy midfield living with the France midfield right now. And I think everyone's talking about Mbappe and Benzema, and that's great. But that midfield is going to be what wins it for France.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Very, very exciting. Of course, that was only the first round of fixtures. And so, of course, we've got the rest of the tournament to look forward to. And as we said already, you know, if the first round is anything to go by, then we are really going to be in for a lot of entertainment throughout this tournament. So we're going to leave it there and we're going to wrap up. Thank you very much, gents, for sharing your thoughts and views on each of the topics that we covered in this particular episode. We'll be back again, guys. Thank you very much for listening and tuning in up until this point in time. And we are going to catch you guys on the next episode. Until then, over and out.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.